This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Syngenta, delivering better food for a better world through outstanding crop solutions.
Davis.
Dude.
Yeah, this is like the best week ever.
How psyched are you?
College game day is happening Saturday when the Cyclones take on the Hawkeyes, and Tyne and I are here to talk about everything that's happening in the College of Ag and Life Sciences right here at Iowa State University.
Live from Sparkle City, USA, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we continue with another installment from this year's College Roadshow from fabulous Ames, Iowa. Guests include, I've got Distinguished Professor of Economics Dermot Hayes written here. Yes. Then it's Ag Professor Charlie Harbaugh and Jamie Benning from the ISU Extension Office. And finally, Steve Witham talks plant pathology. And right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drovers will be talking beef. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now, America's favorite Cyclone, the host of AgriTalk, Jim Laurie.
You know, I'm telling you, there is some rough weather that is expected in Ames here later today. But it's nothing for a Cyclone.
Sure.
Cyclones can handle it.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've got the tent set up out front here at Curtis Hall. We're just going to go out there and rough it a little bit.
Well, and if I'm looking at my notes from Weather College correctly, a cyclone is the definition of rough weather.
Yeah.
So it's just like everyday stuff for you people.
Yeah. I mean, I would like to say that, but then I look at what happened up in Sioux Falls last night, and go, oh my gosh.
Yes. We hate to make light. And it's been raining like crazy here too.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Dude.
And that's not going to let up for a while. There's flood warnings for Northeast Iowa. The Mississippi is finding a way to move back, to refill, I guess. It was very low there for a while, but all of a sudden it's knocking on flood stage again. And, of course, the creeks and the streams and everything through Northeast Iowa are going to be pushing bank full by the time this gets done, Davis.
Oh, for sure.
It is getting soggy again in the Northeast part of the state. So,
Yep.
Hey, get this. At the end of the show, when we're talking with Steve Witham, we're going to be talking about Envirotron.
Envirotron. I love that.
Yes.
I'm just going to leave it at that. Yeah.
I'm just going to leave it at that. We're going to let Steve explain it at the end of the show and have a good time with it.
Envirotron destroy! Maybe that's
the 2019 AgriTalk College Roadshow from Iowa State University is brought to you by the Champions of Yield, Asgrow, and the Roundup Ready Extend Crop System. Talk to your dealer to score the next W for your operation. Davis, what's in the news?
Chip sources report a meeting has been scheduled for next week between China's chief negotiator Liu He and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, among other deputy-level officials. Meanwhile, in a gesture of goodwill, President Trump has agreed to postpone tariff rate increases against China for 2 weeks. Trump tweeted, quote, "The People's Republic of China will be celebrating their 70th anniversary. On October 1st, we have agreed as a gesture of goodwill to move the increased tariffs on $250 billion worth of goods from October 1st to October 15th. Yeah, by all means, let's join in celebrating the start of China's communist regime. Why not?
It's a goodwill gesture to the communists.
This is China yesterday released two lists of products they intend to exempt from tariffs for 1 year, beginning September 17. In response to Trump's decision to postpone the tariff hike, China's Commerce Ministry said it is making inquiries regarding U.S. ag goods, which some say include U.S. soybeans and pork. Ministry spokesperson Gao Fang noted, quote, "We hope that China and the U.S. can continue to meet each other halfway and take practical steps to create a good environment for talks." Mnuchin remains cautious and said he hopes to keep China from retaliating against America's farmers unfairly. Chip.
You know, that list of exemptions, the two obvious things are missing from those exemptions. Soybeans are missing. Pork is missing. A couple of things that, and you know, I thought there was an outside chance that pork would make this list that China would exempt from the tariffs because of the African swine fever that they are dealing with there and the fall off in pork production and their pork prices. pork prices jumped 47% in August. Mm-hmm. There's lots of reasons to exempt U.S. pork from those tariffs, and China didn't do it.
Well, this is interesting. The South China Morning Post reported Taiwan will sign a letter of intent to purchase U.S. soybeans, corn, wheat, and meat products to the tune of $3.6 billion. That's at a confab in Washington next week. In other trade news, Senator Chuck Grassley says he feels positive that USMCA will come up for a vote, noting the timing of a vote will be up to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, but Grassley expects the measure to have bipartisan support and posed the question, quote, she'd have to be asking this, would Democrats want to deny their constituents a better deal just to hurt President Trump? But some Democrats are concerned rushing the deal through could mean key provisions are not explored. Are those provisions
rushing the deal through?
Yeah.
They've had more time to look at this and study this and review it and ask for changes and get some changes and make it exactly, prune it, groom it, do everything that they want to do to it. There's no rushing this through. It's time.
Yep.
It's time to do it.
And quickly, the Trump administration will cancel expanded federal oversight of the waters of the U.S. rule, or WOTUS. The move will reset water pollution standards to the previous rule from 1986. Administration officials believe the move will provide more certainty for farmers, home builders, and businesses while empowering states to rule as individuals on water quality issues. Chip.
Yeah. This is one of the areas when we talk about Trump's EPA. Mm-hmm. That this is a shining spot. This is getting away from some of the rules and regulations through EPA that were making it difficult for farmers to do business, or could have made it difficult for farmers to do business. All right. Thank you, Davis. Appreciate
you
it, buddy.
You bet.
Let's talk to Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. How you doing today, Greg?
Hey, I'm great, Chip. Good morning. So you're in Ames.
Yes.
Are you going to stick around for the football game this weekend?
Well, I got to go home and do a couple of things, but I will be back in Ames for this weekend.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
Good.
So, yeah. Hey, these calf prices. Where are we going with calf prices right now, Greg?
You know, it's always a concern every year we reach this point in the season where we're going to be marketing those calves, and we're looking ahead, and this year just really is kind of depressing. And we're still talking about that Tyson fire, Chip.
Yeah.
And, you know, feeder cattle and calf prices have fallen 4 to 6%. Interesting thing, since that Tyson fire, The 2 weeks after that, we saw a 20% decline in cattle hauled to auctions because that price was much lower. Rebounded a little bit, and now here in September, we're seeing those auction volumes pick up again as much as 15 to 20% from last year, even though we were down last week on a Labor Day. So it looks like those cattle are going to come to market. And looks like if we're having that heavier run that we're expecting, we're going to see lower prices. Still, we're struggling with this Tyson effect on the market. A lot of it's, you know, as you and I have talked, a lot of it's probably mental, but it's still there.
But it's still there. That's exactly right. So you thinking it's going to make more sense to put a little bit more size and scale on these calves before you bring them to the sale barn?
Sure looks like it, and especially if you've got forage this year and if you've got good hay, looks like it's going to make sense to put more weight on them and hang on to them until maybe after the first of the year.
Gotcha. Good stuff, Greg. Thank you, buddy. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, that is Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers.
Performance Beef. Capture every pound, every dollar today. Relationships are a big part of the ag industry, and that's especially true when it comes to developing policies that impact ag in D.C. Mary Kay Thatcher is the senior lead for federal government relations for Syngenta. She joins us now. Mary Kay, why is what you do in the nation's capital so important?
It's important to have an advocate in Washington because the fact is not very many people inside the Beltway really understand agriculture. So it's important to be here to share with them how they're issues that they're considering affect agriculture. The issues are so complex. It's important to have somebody here watching that.
We'll hear more from Mary Kay tomorrow, and for more stories from Syngenta, head over to syngentathrive.com. Save time with Performance Beef. With real-time access from anywhere, it's never been easier to automate feeding, generate real-time closeouts, create accurate invoices, or analyze trends in feed efficiencies, costs, and performance all in one place. Capture every pound, every dollar with Performance Beef. Visit PerformanceLivestockAnalytics.com or follow Performance Beef on Twitter or Facebook for the latest news.
Acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation. Nobody scrutinizes performance like you do. And acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation. The consistent performance of Asgrove brand soybeans helps to keep your profitability out in front. Offering a suite of tailored, integrated solutions and 100% exclusive genetics for strong yield potential. Plus, the Roundup Ready Extend crop system. The number one soybean system planted by farmers. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to control more weeds than any other soybean system, so you can spray your fields with confidence. Ask your dealer how much further you can grow when Asgrow leads the way. Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology is a restricted use pesticide. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing, and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check with your state pesticide regulatory agency for specific restrictions in your state.
Some things are just better done in the dark, like sleeping, sleep talking,
hello, polka dots,
sleepwalking. Farming in the dark is not one of those things, but that's exactly what you're doing when you don't ask for the meal and oil levels of the soybeans you produce. Because, hey, your processor knows, and so do their buyers. Stop farming in the dark. You'll sleep better.
No, it's a cross stitch.
A message from the Soy Checkoff. Yeah. Click to find out more.
Now I'm going to the store.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous one-month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
3, 2, 1. Oh no. Which button am I?
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year so everyone knows what to do when they hear. Prepare your family at ready.gov/firedrill. Brought to you by FEMA, the Ad Council, and Make Safe.
In the morning, you're coffeeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
You know, it doesn't really matter, Davis. It doesn't really matter how many times you hear it. You just don't get tired of it.
I don't know about that. Hey, you know, there are actually one interstate rivalry going on and one interstudio rivalry going on. Did you know about this?
I did not.
Tonight, my boy Jack has his season opener with the 7th grade football team of the medium-sized Blue Enigma.
Yeah.
Against the Cyclones from your own hometown.
From Denver, Iowa.
Yeah, yeah. Drink that in.
Oh.
Drink that in. That's where I'll be.
Yeah. You tailgating on that one, are you?
Oh, you better believe it. There's going to be a scene.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I am Chip Flory. That is Davis Michelson, and we are live on the College Roadshow in Ames, Iowa, at Iowa State University. Thank you so much to Asgrow and the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for making it possible for us to get out here on the road and talk about the things that are important at the ag colleges around the country. And being here at the College of Ag and Life Sciences at Iowa State University, it is a treat for me. There is no doubt about it. Let's have a conversation now about what to expect from these markets, okay? We've got Dr. Dermot Hayes. He is a distinguished professor of economics here at Iowa State University. Dermot, it's good to talk with you. How are you?
Chip, great. Thanks.
Good, good, good. So we are about 40 minutes from getting the USDA reports that everybody for the last 3 weeks has been saying, well, we have to wait for the USDA reports out on September 12th. We're almost there, Dermot. What do we expect?
Well, this year, I think there's consensus on yields, national yields, somewhere south of 170. But there's no consensus on how many harvested acres we're going to get. And there's no real consensus on how many planted acres we have. I've seen private forecasts with 5 million fewer acres than the last USDA report. And that could mean a reduction in production of almost a billion bushels. So it's I've never seen so much uncertainty. It had to do with that really wet planting season and incentives to take prevent plant around end of May, early June. Markets were really low. A lot of people did prevent plant, but then put in a cover crop, and it looks like soybeans and on the satellites. And it's gonna be the fall before we know how many acres we harvest.
I was going to ask, Dermot, how do we figure out just how many acres are out there?
There was an opportunity with the NAS survey, but the way they asked the question was confusing. It was, of the acres you intended to plant at the beginning of the week, how many did you get planted? Whereas, which would be a very different question than of the acres you intended to plant at the beginning of the year. And so I don't know of any good way to do it, especially because of all those cover crops, that some of which are just bin run beans.
Yeah. So do you think that NAS at some point is going to lean a little heavier on the certified acreage data than maybe they have in the past from FSA?
They have a tradition of not adjusting as quickly as they might. So big crops get bigger, small crops get smaller. And so if there is an adjustment, it'll be, I think, modest.
But Dermot, when we're talking about a corn crop and the August estimate at 13.9 billion bushels, is that a big crop or a small crop?
It's a small crop relative to the last several years, but it's a big crop historically. And it's a very big crop given the planting conditions and how late it got planted. I suspect that it'll be a lot less than that, but how much lower? It depends on how many harvested acres of corn we have, and I just have no way to figure that out.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got to wait until later this fall to get a better understanding of what the real supply side, the real supply for the corn market is. Between now and getting that better understanding, Dermot, what should guys be looking at when they're trying to figure out what these markets are going to do?
Well, just as an example, I've got 100 kids in one of my class, all farm kids. And according to USDA, they're going to harvest as many corn acres this year as last year. And I asked the kids in the class, is that true? Go home over the weekend and ask your parents, because they know what the neighbors did. They know what they did themselves. Not one of them said they're going to harvest as many acres as last year. And there were some from the eastern corn belt that were down 20, 30, 40%.
Right. So we need to get this acreage situation figured out. We need to get the yield figured out. But one of the things that I think is really difficult for growers to understand this year is if you take acres out of the mix, that actually helps to support your national average yield estimate.
Oh, okay. I hadn't thought about it like that, because it's the lower yielding acres
that are coming out of the mix.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. So more than ever, and I've been asking growers to do this for 2 months now, Dermot, is ignore the acres, because the acres are only adding confusion to it. Just look at the total production. USDA in August was 13.9 billion bushels. I think if we get a number somewhere around where Pro Farmer estimated between 13.3 and 13.4 billion bushels, I think the market, we get a positive reaction to that.
I agree. And I've calculated in different ways and come up with numbers even closer to 13. So.
Okay. All right. So let me ask you this. Let's ask it this way. What is the downside risk on this crop?
On the price?
No. No, on the size of the crop. What do you think?
I'm sorry. It is acres. Yeah. I have to come back to acres. We're getting better and better at modeling yields, but the incentives with the preventive plant payments, the market was so low back then that I think a lot of people took it.
Gotcha. Okay. So where are we headed with this market? What's going to be our pricing opportunities this fall?
I think there's more upside on corn and beans than there is downside. On beans, there's the opportunity to sell more into China if we can get a deal, and that's looking somewhat likely now. And on corn, it's the fact that we may not have the production that the USDA is expected.
Right, right. And then, of course, we've got to turn our attention to South America and what they're going to be producing down there. And we're right on the edge. I mean, this weekend is going to be the go time down there to start planting beans in Brazil.
Yeah. You know, if we're paying a 25% duty and going into China, that means their beans are worth 25% more than ours.
Right.
Yesterday, Argentina got approval to send bean meal to China. They're more scarce on bean meal than they are on bean oil. So it makes sense for them to just buy the bean meal. They had been refusing to do that because they want to, you know, keep their own crushing business.
Right. Online.
So Argentina is going to get a boost out of that, and Brazil is getting a boost out of just higher bean prices and growing a second crop of corn, which makes things far more lucrative. So I think some of these fires you see might be due to incentives rather than desire to pollute the planet.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, let's talk specifically about the Iowa farmer here for just a little bit, Dermot. We've been watching that net farm income come down. MFP 1.0, MFP 2.0, that's all helping with some cash flow and to brighten the outlook some. But what do we really need? What does agriculture in the state of Iowa need to fix the situation that we're in?
We need a deal with China to get beans flowing back there in traditional amounts. And we need an ethanol mandate that's actually working rather than what happened a couple of weeks ago. That was, for corn prices, that was an absolute disaster. Yeah. That mandate, either it binds or it doesn't bind. And if you effectively reduce it, then it's not binding and there's no support.
Right.
We built this whole ethanol industry based on the assumption that the government would continue to support it. And so to kind of go that back door way and reduce the mandate was... It had a non-linear effect on the ethanol market and ultimately on the corn market.
Yeah, well, Dermot, when Congress passes a law that basically says we're going to use this amount, that was done completely to give the industry the certainty and the incentive to go ahead and build the industry, and you take that away from it, and all of a sudden you're dealing with margins like we've got in the ethanol industry, and it's no fun for those guys.
I bet there are plants out there that are not covering even their input costs, not to mention covering their cost of capital. And same way with biodiesel. We got Ames is home to a huge biodiesel industry, and it's that has got to be hurting too.
Absolutely. So RFS, if we just get away from the small refinery exemptions, that's not saying it right. We need to have a reallocation of the exempted blending requirements to give us a shot at getting back.
Well, that's going to be politically unpopular because you've given some refiners an exemption. Now you're going to dump on the ones that you obeyed the law and make them blend more. So that's kind of harsh to the companies that didn't get an exemption.
Yeah, but it's companies like Exxon and they make billions and billions of dollars.
I know. Hardship, right?
That's right.
Trick run corn.
That's right. Dermot, I sure enjoyed the conversation with you. Thank you so much for making time.
Yeah, no trouble.
All right. That is Dermot Hayes, Dr. Dermot Hayes, distinguished professor of economics here at Iowa State University. When we come back, we're going to talk about grain storage with Charlie Herberg. And we're going to talk nutrient management with Jamie Benning right here at Iowa State University on the AgriTalk and U.S. Farm Report College Roadshow.
Land, family, good weather. All a farmer needs for the simple life. Just a field, a family, sunshine, and rain. And a drone for digital imaging, and software to run geospatial analysis, and a commercial driver's license for heavy equipment, and a spreadsheet program to help maximize your return on investment, and an understanding of genetics, biology, economics, climatology, banking, global market prices, land lease negotiation, engineering, and HR management. Oh, and estate planning. So you can pass this so-called simple life onto your kids. At Pioneer, we're proud to work with generations of American farmers in the most complex and rewarding industry on earth. So from your friends at Pioneer.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
Joining us now is ProFarmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, man, we're just a half an hour away from getting the USDA report, and we are looking at strong gains in the soybean market. What's going on?
Tie that one to China. We've gotten more thawing of trade tensions here ahead of the planned meetings for next month between U.S. and Chinese officials on the trade front. China came out and said that they're going to buy ag goods earlier this week. They said overnight that will potentially include soybeans, and that's got us off and running. President Trump pushed back by 2 weeks planned increases in tariffs on Chinese goods. And so everything's feeling a little bit better, and that's given the funds encouragement to cover up some short positions ahead of the report here this morning.
You know, I love the way that you started off first thing today this morning, Brian, when you were talking about China and their comments that they're going to be purchasing some more U.S. ag goods. You said, yeah, sorry, I know we've been here before, but this one feels like it's got some teeth to it.
Potentially. Well, we'll see. We've been down this road before, only to be turned back. So we'll see how it all shakes out. But this does feel like both sides are at least willing to give. And, that everybody that's ever done negotiations on anything knows that that's the key, is both sides have to give to make a deal work.
Exactly. Boy, and it really popped the hog market this morning too, didn't it?
Yeah, in addition to saying that soybeans potentially would be purchased, pork was also on that list, and we're limit up now across the board pretty much. You have to get out into some of the far deferred contracts before you see anything that's trading at the moment.
Gotcha. Good stuff. All right. We'll get that report covered here in just a bit. That is ProFarmer editor Brian Grady.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is The Best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, The Best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
I'm Andrew McRae, your host for Farming the Countryside. We're talking about issues, tips, and trends affecting rural and agricultural America.
And then it was a burden on the local office. Essentially, you just have our county right now, or PLC.
On each show, I talk with guests who provide the latest info on important topics and the challenges and successes on their own operations.
We had an open house and invited the entire community. It was a huge event. We had about 750 people show up.
The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
The IBM Watson Decision Platform for Agriculture, helping to feed a hungry world with the power of AI.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson back in the studio, and
you
we
betcha.
Are on the road in Ames, Iowa, at Iowa State University. Today's show, the College Road Show, is brought to you by the Champions of Yield, Asgrow and Roundup Ready Extend Crop System. Talk to your dealer to score the next W for your operation. Okay, I'm so looking forward to this conversation that we're going to have right now. We've got Dr. Charlie Herberg. He is a storage specialist here at Iowa State University. Charlie, it's good to see you again. How are you?
Great, and it's good to be back.
Good deal. Now, a year ago, Charlie, when we were here, we were talking about, heads up, this 2018 corn crop could have some storage issues. Where do we stand on that 18 crop?
Well, it did have some. We got a little bit of a break last fall and got some warm weather that buffered that some. But we're seeing damaged corn coming out of storage now. And I think what happened was we put some corn up 17-18% moisture, and probably it's catching up with us now.
Yeah.
So we had some problems, not nearly what I thought we might have.
Right, right. This year, if we thought we were going to have problems last year, this year, your list of things that you need to check off before corn goes in the bin has got to be twice as long as it was a year ago.
Well, yeah, it's the story of planting date and early season wet, cool weather that delayed everything. And now we're going to have progressively, depending on planting date, we're going to have progressively higher risk storage material. Even the stuff that was planted, say, Easter, which is more or less on time, is struggling to mature. And what we'll see is progressively less maturity, softer kernels, lower test weight. Maybe as it, if it doesn't get fully to black layer, then we may see smaller kernels, but otherwise full-size kernels, but not fully developed starch-wise. Yep. And that's a recipe for storage issues if you are in that situation.
Yeah, and you know, Charlie, it feels like the market has become comfortable with the idea, and I'm talking about the cash market as well here, has become comfortable with the idea that here we are, it's September 12th, we haven't killed the crop yet, the forecast has got some warmer temperatures in it, everything's going to be okay with it. But when you get in the field, the ear of corn tells you a different story right now.
That's right, it does. We've assumed that everything is fine all year, and the research has been clear for many years about planting date and what happens with delayed planting date and cool early season development. So we shouldn't be surprised that some of this corn is going to struggle, and beans too.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Okay. I want to continue the conversation because it all fits with what we're talking about with Jamie Benning. Jamie Benning is the nutrient management specialist here at Iowa State. Jamie, it's good to see you. How are you?
Great. Doing well.
Good. Okay. With all the things that Charlie was just talking about, the delayed planting, all that excess water that we had out there this spring, Jamie, it's got to create some issues when it comes to nutrient management, keeping nutrients where we want it instead of downstream.
Right. It does give us an opportunity once we harvest this crop to think and reflect on what happened this season and how that impacts our plans for next year. So we're in the sixth year of our Iowa nutrient reduction strategy. So water quality is really on the forefront of the minds of farmers in the state, and we hope to continue to increase that enthusiasm and awareness of the nutrient reduction strategy and the practices that farmers can put in place, not only to help protect their bottom line and improve profitability, but also protect water quality as well.
Yeah, and the thing, and I mention this all the time, Jamie, farmers have got to take this on themselves. We've got to get out in front of this issue rather than being mandated later on how to handle it. If farmers are leaders on nutrient management, it's only going to benefit us down the road.
True. Yeah. You know, we see a lot of great leaders showcasing the practices they're using now, sharing their story about their success with cover crops, their success with using different nutrient management practices. And we really just need to see that increase. So we really encourage farmers that are using these practices to share their story, share it with their neighbors. If you're curious, haven't taken the plunge yet, go talk to those farmer neighbors that are using those practices and ask the questions. Farmers are humble. They don't like to, always share those things. But in this case, it's really important for the success of the strategy to, as you said, keep it voluntary continue this progress.
Talk more about cover crops. Some here's how to do it right, but be careful if you're thinking about this.
Right. So we're really encouraging those first-time users of cover crops to use them ahead of soybeans. That's a point in the rotation that you have a little bit more flexibility, especially with cereal rye, something that overwinters. When you terminate in the spring, you have more flexibility ahead of soybeans than you do ahead of corn. So first-time users, cereal rye, seed that in the fall, and you have that bigger window to terminate it in the spring.
Right. Okay. Are you recommending any specific crops to use for cover crops?
In addition to cereal rye, if you're a little nervous about that time to terminate in the spring or you're using it ahead of corn, oats is still a great option. So, seeding those earlier is great to get that fall growth so that you maximize the amount of biomass you're getting. And the more biomass, you're increasing the amount of nitrogen uptake and where those roots are holding it in place and then providing that nutrient to the next
What happened to radishes? Radishes used to be all the talk.
To get a a growth on radishes, you need to seed them early. So usually the window in the fall doesn't allow that. You know, after silage in areas where you have some compaction issues, radishes are great, but the cost, you know, is tough to really get that performance out of them that you'd like most years.
And there's some cost-sharing availability on cover crops, right?
Yes. So if you live in a particular area with a watershed project or statewide, there's cost share available for cover crops as well in Iowa. So go to your Soil and Water Conservation District office. They will help you outline the opportunities for you for cost share and help you determine what's the best fit for your farm.
See, I spend a lot of time in Northeast Iowa, Jamie. And there is an awesome effort going on up in Northeast Iowa. Well, think of all the hills and everything. And it's a vulnerable area to begin with. But the amount of cover crops that you see in the fall now, it's just fantastic.
It is great. You know, driving Highway 20, getting towards Waterloo, you see a lot of cover crop acres there. There's a lot of great farmer leaders in that area that are sharing the message and sharing their success with cover crops, watershed coordinators. You know, we're seeing growth in businesses providing cover crop services and seed sales. So, you know, that we talk a lot about the water benefits of the nutrient reduction strategy, and that's the focus. But we're going to see a lot of economic development opportunities for those seed dealers as we get into the edge of field practices for contractors, for engineers. So there's a lot of local benefits that are going to happen as a result of implementing the strategy.
Yep. Good stuff, Jamie. Really good stuff. Back to Charlie Herberg here. Charlie, it used to be when we talked storage of grain, it was all about corn. Beans hardly even got a mention on it, but now with the market conditions, with the different marketing strategies that guys are using, beans are going in the bin more and more. What do we need to be watching for?
Well, beans normally come out of the field drier. That may not be the case this year, but normally they do, and so we have fewer storage problems. We had a few last year in southwest Iowa where those huge rains were in the fall and found out that high moisture beans over 15 is not something you want to try to carry forward. Right. You kind of want to move them on or dry them with air and then move them on. I would say something about the corn. Pay attention to every hybrid that you have planted and check the test weight. Use test weight as your barometer for which ones are probably more mature or probably less, and move the lighter ones on down the road. Don't try to keep it because we'll probably have not very good keeping quality in them.
Test weight is such when we talk test weight and the test weight debate gets started out there on Twitter, it's just embarrassing sometimes, Charlie.
Yes, it's misunderstood.
It's so misunderstood, but it's kernel slickness is a factor in there, which gets to how much starch is packed into that kernel.
Yeah, there's test weight is a reasonable barometer of how much starch is packed into the kernel. There's other things that affect test weight too, like shape and surface roughness and all that, but it's still, the heavier the corn, generally, the better storage properties you're going to have, and this year is one to pay attention to that.
Yeah. Boy, Charlie, if we get to October 10th with this corn crop and we end the growing season, that's going to be too early for some of the corn out there. So prioritize your harvest.
Absolutely.
Know which crop has got to move directly from the field to the truck to town.
Exactly. And don't try to cut corners and hold some wetter corn thinking that, well, we can dry it in the spring or maybe we can blend it in the spring or whatever. Don't. This is not a year to cut corners. I think we'd pay the price for that.
Yeah. So when it comes to blending that, guys have still got some 18 crop corn out there.
Sure.
They've kind of been sitting on it for just such an occasion when you get right down to it. I mean, be careful when you're doing it, though.
Absolutely. We're going to see, both in the grain industry and on and from farms, we're going to see some pretty wide moisture blends probably with the old crop corn. If you do that, be prepared to use it right, head it to a user right away that isn't going to try to store it. Not an export. It'll just go bad on the ship or whatever. But we want to make sure you use that up right away.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Jamie, thank you so much for coming over here. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Keep getting the message out there. It is so important that farmers take the leadership on the nutrient management and the water quality issues.
Completely agree.
Excellent. Thank you. Charlie, it's always good to see you.
Thank you. Always good to be here.
All right. That's Charlie Herberger, Herberg, the storage specialist here at Iowa State University, and Jamie Benning, nutrient management specialist. When we come back, we're going to hear about that Envirotron. What exactly is an Envirotron? Sounds like some sort of a, I don't know, alien spaceship or something. We'll talk about it next here on AgriTalk.
This is Brian Grady, Pro Farmer Editor and AgriTalk Market Analyst, inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers and what to watch tomorrow with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio to start today. Unbiased and free of advertisements, you'll get our detailed, time-tested advice for cash marketers and futures and options users, along with our premium analysis to give you the information that you need. Visit profarmer.com/radio right now to start your free month. It's fast and easy to start, and there's no long-term commitment.
Farm Journal is bringing Hemp College to Altoona, Iowa on September 17th. This one-day farmer-focused conference will get you on the right production path with information on the best agronomic practices for hemp production, marketing, legal considerations, and policy news. Interact with growers and industry experts and gather answers to all your hemp questions. Our last Hemp College sold out, so don't miss your chance to attend. Register today at agweb.com/events/hempcollege.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture is what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
Feel confident every time you turn the key with a durable, dependable battery from John Deere. Ideal for riding lawn equipment, tractors, utility vehicles, pickup trucks, and just about anything else on four wheels. You can trust that your engine will fire up day after day with a reliable performance or strong box battery from John Deere. Better still, bring in your old battery at time of purchase and receive a recycle credit for the battery core from participating dealers. Learn more about battery choices at your local John Deere dealer.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is The Best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, The Best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
We are talking with Christine Clabone. She is the Director of Commercial Marketing for New Holland North America. Christine, you had some exciting news at Farm Progress, a major giveaway. What can you tell us about the Great New Holland Hay Tool Giveaway?
Well, we're really excited. We're gearing up to kick off our 125th year as a brand next year. And core to our success and our deepest love of products goes back to our hay tool equipment and offering those solutions to growers and producers. So we are giving away 5 pieces of equipment, and they include everything you need for a successful operation, including our T6 180 Dynamic Command tractor in bloop, but she's beauty. also, our tried and true Roll Belt 560 Specialty Crop Plus Round Baler.
Okay.
That technology has been around for a long time, but we just keep perfecting it a little bit and a little bit, and You know, why change something when it's not broke?
Right.
We're also giving away a special edition L228 skid steer loader with bale grapple. That's also in blue. So our skid steers usually come in yellow.
Yeah.
But this one is a special anniversary edition. This year at Farm Progress, we've launched our Rollabar 230 Twin Basket Rake.
Yeah.
So that'll be part of the giveaway. And last but not least, our Discbine 313 Disc Mower Conditioner.
I don't have a calculator in front of me, Christine, but this is a total.
We're looking at over $400,000
wow.
worth of equipment. And then there's small prizes along the way in constant drawings. And all you have to do is go to newhollandgiveaway.com.
newhollandgiveaway.com.
Yes, sir.
Have fun celebrating 125 years next year, Christine.
Thank you so much.
All right, that is Christine Clabone. She is the Director of Commercial Marketing for New Holland, North America.
On your favorite radio station or your preferred digital device, AgriTalk is live every weekday.
And it's a special live this weekday. We are at Iowa State University on the campus, right here in Curtis Hall at the Brenton Center inside of Curtis Hall, which is kind of the heartbeat of the CALS, the College of Ag and Life Sciences here at Iowa State University. Thank you so much to ASGRO and the Roundup Ready Extend Crop System for making it possible for us to bring you today's edition of the College Roadshow. We're going to be back this afternoon talking with Chad Hart and Lee Scholes. We're going to talk about the USDA reports. We're going to talk about what to expect from the cattle markets, the hog markets going forward. We've got a lot more to cover and a lot more information to bring you from Iowa State University today. And, of course, who knows? I may try to get a few game predictions before everything is said and done here in Ames. Okay, let's continue the conversation now. We've got Dr. Steve Witham with us. He is he joins us right now. Steve, thank you so much for making time coming over.
Thanks for the opportunity to be here and talk about the Envirotron chip.
Yeah, okay. You're a plant pathologist here at Iowa State.
That's correct.
What is a plant pathologist?
A plant pathologist studies plant diseases, and we try to understand ways to manage those diseases or in my lab, we try to understand how plants and pathogens interact so we can utilize that knowledge to develop crops that are resistant to pathogens in the future.
Right, in the future. I mean, that's the amazing thing about a plant pathologist. You are always thinking 10 years down the road. Today, what's happening, yes, it's important.
Right.
But it's what could be happening 10 years
that's
down
right.
the road that yep. you guys are really focused on.
Yeah, yeah. We have to... You know, we have to look at what's happening in other regions of the country or the world
yeah.
and try to anticipate new problems that that might reach us. And there's even new things that even pop up here that we have to be ready for.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's where the Envirotron comes into play, right?
That's right.
What is this thing, Steve? I mean, I'm so intrigued by it.
The Envirotron is it's a controlled environment plant growth facility. It's a new instrumentation system that we're developing on just off of outside of campus. And the purpose of the Envirotron is to be able to conduct experiments under multiple environmental conditions at a, you know, in a single go. So we can look at plant performance or plant responses to stresses or pathogens in up to 8 different environmental conditions in one single experiment.
Is this a climate change deal that you're talking about, Steve, where you're trying to simulate what the climate might be in 10 years?
Yes, we have that capability. So we can control temperature, day, night, time temperature, day length. We can control CO2 concentrations. We can control soil moisture. So a lot of factors that you might play into future climate scenarios, we can test the performance of plants in under those scenarios.
You know, and it seems to me that it's, but you still need to plan for long-term, big-scale use in these plant developments, right? It's not like we're going to say, okay, here in the Envirotron, we can say that based on conditions going into the year 2025, these are the different varieties or hybrids that we want to use. That's not the focus. It's more just general preparedness for the future.
Right. So experiments that we conduct in the Envirotron might give us a clue about some new genes or different forms of genes that might be important to bring into our germplasm to develop future resilient crops to new conditions.
Tell us what might be the coolest thing you've got going on at the Envirotron right now.
So we're not in full operation yet, okay. but we've been doing some beta tests, some pilot experiments, and some of the researchers have done some experiments where they've actually compared heat stress responses of corn plants in the Envirotron versus what's happening in the field. And what they found, which is very very exciting to us, is that the responses that they're seeing in the Envirotron mirror what you could see in the field. So one of the concerns about controlled environment facilities is that they may not always mirror what's happening in the field. And so far with these preliminary experiments, we're seeing some correlation, which is a very good sign. We're also doing some tests of plant performance under different carbon dioxide concentrations, which those are ongoing, so we don't know the results yet.
But. Okay. All right. Steve, how are students involved in the Envirotron? Will they be?
We've had students involved, so especially the robotics aspects of the facility. So there's a robotics team that developed the robotic rover that carries the sensors to the plants and does the imaging of the plants, and that was developed largely by students under the direction of Lee Tang, who's the professor of the robotics team. Yeah.
Yeah, very. You know what this sounds like? I mean, it's a plant breeder's Disneyland, isn't it?
I think so. I mean, normally plant breeders can work with the environment they have and try to develop the best varieties under those conditions. But now they, you know, we can start thinking 10, 15, 20 years ahead and start anticipating the types of germplasm we'll need in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. This is something that I'm going to have to come down and see at some point, Steve. When will it be fully operational?
Well, it's operating right now. We're kind of in a reliability kind of fix minor problems stage.
Yep, prove it stage.
But we're giving tours to people right now. But I think in a few months it'll be up and running, and we'll have experiments running with users designing experiments and gathering data. So in the very near future, you could come and see it operate. Yeah,
it's going to be fun. Yeah, I'm excited about this. There's going to be some real innovative stuff come out of this.
Yeah, we certainly hope so. We think it's a very unique resource. It fills an important gap in our technologies.
And you know, if you're a young person out there that's thinking about getting into plant pathology or plant breeding, I mean, what a recruiting tool.
Yeah, it's a very exciting time. Anything that involves robots gets people pretty excited.
It's an incredible recruiting tool for you. You're going to get some of the brightest minds out there coming here.
I think
to
so.
Iowa
We've
State.
Had some very talented people working on it already.
It's fantastic.
So, yep.
Good stuff, Steve. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Chip.
All right. That is Dr. Steve Witham, plant pathologist here at Iowa State University in charge of the Envirotron. I love that, Davis.
I love that, too. I love that, too.
All right, guys, we're going to be right back here at Iowa State University this afternoon. Like I said, Chad Hart, grain marketing specialist, and Lee Scholes, livestock marketing specialist. We're going to take up a big conversation this afternoon right here on AgriTalk.
What do you call someone who studies the weather? A climatologist. What do you call someone who evaluates investments? A financial analyst. A person who studies DNA? A geneticist, a person who owns their own business, an entrepreneur, who researches markets, an economist, and who handles employees, an HR manager, someone who keeps devices up to date, a software technician, someone who does business internationally, a global trader, someone who transfers assets from one generation to the next, an estate planner, and someone who does all these things, you call them a farmer. Because being a farmer is the one job that requires dozens of other jobs. And at Pioneer, we're proud that our job is to work with generations of American farmers in the most complex and rewarding industry on Earth. So from your friends at Pioneer, thank you, farmers.
Thanks to Syngenta for sponsoring this AgriTalk podcast. For more news on Syngenta and the trends driving the industry, head to syngentathrive.com.